Hey guys, I'm Paul Bates, and this is the Fermentation Podcast. Join me on this journey to put fermentation into practice, create culture, and revive this lost art that connects all of us to our cultures of the past. Today is Thursday, October 16th, 2014, and this is episode number 10. So today on the show is just you and me again. You know, I just figured I'd go over a couple of basics of, you know, why do you use salt? And it's all about salt today. Salt, salt brines, weight ratios, you know, anything having to do with how would you calculate this? And I hope you guys enjoy it. But before that, all the topics and links for today's show will be in the show notes at fermentationpodcast.com. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, just shoot me an email at paul@fermentationpodcast.com or go to the website and click on the contact button on the top. You can also connect to me on Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, and Twitter. Just go to fermentationpodcast.com and you should see the links in the sidebar. And also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, just head out to the website, click on the guest button on top, and there's a guest submission form that I have there for you to fill out. So let's get into the show. So today I thought I'd do something a little different and go over frequently asked questions around salt and salt brines and fermenting with salt. There's a lot of different questions that people ask, like, you know, what type of salt should I use, or can you use too much salt, or what are the different salinity ratios, or just a general overview on salt brines and how to put them together, and maybe what would be a typical ratio for different things. So that would just be a general overview today of what I'm going to go over. So to start off with, why even use salt? I mean, why don't you just throw your stuff in a jar with water, let it ferment, and off you go. Well, to start with, salt gives lactic acid bacteria an edge over all the other bacteria. I mean, it helps them out and helps them outcompete the other bad bacteria. So if you could watch this in a microscope, you would probably see all these little different bacterias growing. And then you throw salt into the mix, and you have the bacteria that don't like salt, they kind of slow down and they can't really multiply, or they might even die. And then the lactic acid bacteria, they see these available spaces. They move in, start multiplying like crazy, and they take up the space before other bacteria can take up that same space. So then you have an overpopulation of lactic acid bacteria that sort of dominates the entire jar. And then since you have so much lactic acid bacteria, they're going to start producing that lactic acid, which then starts turning the jar more acidic. And that also in turn discourages aerobic yeast and molds. And not only does the acid discourage yeast and molds, the salt does as well. So the more salt you put up to a certain point, the more that aerobic yeast and molds won't really like the salty environment, whereas lactic acid bacteria don't mind so much salt. But really though, the most important part of using salt for me is just because it makes things taste good. I mean, you can have a jar of pickles and don't put any salt at all, and you'll have like that pickle flavor, but I think it's the sodium and all the different minerals that kind of tingle your taste buds and just make things taste good naturally. So how about the question, can you use too much salt? I mean, can you ferment something and actually put so much salt in that it would kind of hinder it? So I've read in some places that yes, you can use too much salt. Supposedly at higher concentrations, the lactic acid bacteria can't survive, whereas some of the other bad bacteria can. More of the bacteria that could break things down. And instead of getting a lactic acid fermentation, then you almost get like a salt-cured kind of pickle. So when we're talking about fermentations and, you know, making lactic acid fermentations, it's not the salt that really does the fermentation or the curing or whatever. It's actually the lactic acid. It's the acid environment that you desire for making most ferments. So when you discourage the lactic acid bacteria and you get more of those other bacterias, some of those bacterias will actually eat and consume the lactic acid. So say if you start off with a good amount of acid in there, you can actually have some of the bacteria eat the lactic acid and then it starts raising the pH. So then you get more of like a neutral or even alkaline fermentation. So once you start raising the pH, then that's where you have problems with other bacterias. So you don't necessarily want to use too much salt. But really for me, I'm not worried about using too much salt because say if you put too much salt in a ferment, you're most likely going to taste it. You're probably going to have a cringe factor, you know, where you taste a slice of pickle and just think, wow, that is really salty. You know, I can't stand that. Most likely you're going to use the amount of salt that tastes good to you. If you use too much, then, you know, you just back off it a little bit So I think for me, the question of can you use too much salt, it's almost not really valid, because if you use too much salt, you're probably going to have a ferment that is just not going to taste so good. But, you know, use your common sense. Use as much salt as you feel is necessary. And, you know, don't forget to taste it and see what it tastes like. Now, one of the big questions that I see all the time, and sometimes a question that some people ask me, is what kind of salt do I use for pickling, or what kind of salt do I use for fermentation? If you look at the amount of salt out there that's available to use for so many different applications, like cooking or fermenting or canning, there are so many different types of salt. And I'll go over quite a few here just to give you a brief overview of some of the more popular salts out there and what they're used for, and then what I actually use to ferment my stuff. So to start off these collections of salts, let's start off with just plain Jane, everybody knows, table salt, which is sodium chloride, NaCl. That's what you would find in your average salt shaker, probably on your table or at a restaurant. In just plain table salt, there's only two minerals. That's just sodium and chlorine. And there's also usually some anti-caking ingredients in table salt. And a couple of reasons they put these ingredients in there is if you leave salt just on the counter or just open to air, it'll start absorbing the moisture from the atmosphere. And then also, I'm sure they probably added in there too to cut down on costs, and they don't have to put so much salt in there. They can start sticking these other ingredients in there. But table salt is not what you want for fermentation. Not to say that table salt won't work in your fermentation, it's just there's so many other better ingredients out there that will give you a much higher quality, more nutritious type of fermentation than just two minerals with, you know, some added ingredients. Now, the next salt is almost identical to table salt. It's just iodized table salt. So they take regular table salt and they add iodine. And this also includes the anti-caking ingredients. And the reason iodine was added was that people were starting to get iodine deficiencies, which cause goiters. And goiters are, it's like a swelling in your thyroid gland in your neck. And also, iodine deficiency was a major cause of mental retardation in the world, even today. So that was another thing that adding iodine to the salt prevented. I think one of the main reasons that iodine deficiencies in people's diets were happening was, say, if you live close to an ocean, oceans have large amounts of iodine. And when you eat seafood and eat seaweed and things from the ocean, you actually get a lot of iodine. But when you live more inland and away from oceans or any kind of water source that has a lot of iodine, you have to rely more on the soil for your iodine. And I think what was happening is that unsustainable farming practices were depleting the soil of iodine. And then when crops were grown, they lacked enough iodine for people to get their daily dose. So that's why they really started adding iodine to salt, which it did actually help. But today, if you have a varied diet and you start including things that have iodine in your diet, then you really don't have to worry about, or even using some of the salts coming up that I'm going to talk about. So anyways, putting iodine in the salt cured that problem, but you don't want to use iodized salt in fermentation, not only because of the anti-caking ingredients, but because the iodine that's added can react to the fermentation, causing darker or off colors. So if you're eating seaweed, like what's in sushi, you know, what sushi's wrapped in, or some of that green stuff that's floating in miso soup, that seaweed, you know, you'll be fine. Or adding sea salt to your diet, or just eating seafood in general. And you can see all of this is related to the ocean. So you're probably getting enough iodine if you're doing all that. But if you're worried about it, research it and just decide for yourself. So the next kind of salt I want to go over is pickling salt. And you've probably seen this either in the store or you've gone out to a website and you're looking at a recipe for fermentation and it says use pickling salt. And this type of salt is exactly like table salt, except it just doesn't have the anti-caking ingredients in it. So nothing really special about it. It's just table salt that doesn't have those added ingredients in it, which also means if you let it sit out, then it's probably going to start clumping together. So you can use pickling salt for fermentation. It's not a big deal. It's going to work. No problem there. It's just two minerals. And I think you can do a lot better than that in terms of flavor and nutrition. So you'll see in some of the later salts why I like to use those instead of some of these, you know, less nutritious ones. So finally, rounding out all of the two mineral NaCl salts is kosher salt. And this type of salt was actually made for religious reasons, believe it or not. There's a Jewish law that requires blood to be extracted from meat before you eat it, which then means that the meat is kosher. So what they did was they made a salt that was only pure sodium chloride, just like pickling salt, but it had a much coarser grind. And because the granules are so much larger than just regular salt, you usually won't find any kind of anti-caking ingredients because it doesn't cake together very easy. But what it does do is it actually pulls blood out of meat very efficiently. So that's why kosher salt is more popular in the Jewish tradition. So you can use it. It does work in fermentation, but it still only has the two nutrients, you know, the sodium and the chlorine. So I still think you can do better than that. And this brings us to what I like to use, which is sea salt. And this is just how it sounds, salt that originates from the sea. And this is what I like to use because it has so much more going for it. It has so much more in it than table salt does. You might see different sources say anywhere over 80 more minerals than table salt, but it really depends on, you know, where the sea salt was obtained, and it can vary, but it has a lot more nutrients than just the two. So some of the major minerals that it has in addition to sodium and chlorine has potassium, phosphorus, calcium, sulfur. Those are some of the more macronutrients. And it also has trace minerals like iron, iodine, manganese, zinc, bromine, boron, copper. And the list just goes on and on, you know, 80 more minerals. So you can see, rather than just having the two minerals, you can imagine your body getting this sea salt and thinking, you know, I could use this so much more efficiently in so many other ways. So what I like to use is definitely sea salt. And sea salt is actually made in two ways. Either it's mined from the earth from ancient seabeds that have solidified, or it's made by taking seawater and evaporating it, so concentrating it. And both ways originate from the sea or mineralized water. And some people say that the ones from salt mines are more pure since, you know, they're from ancient beds and less prone to concentrating toxins found in our ocean water today. But you're using such a small amount, I think either one's probably fine. You know, they both have a large spectrum of minerals. So whether you're getting evaporated seawater or you're getting mined seawater that's long since evaporated and solidified into mountains, I think they're both fine, and they both will probably add a lot of flavor to what you're making. So there's a lot of different types of sea salt. I guess I'll only cover, you know, a couple here, but the first one is a little more expensive and is more popular in French cooking, but it's called fleur de sel, or flower of salt. And this is a type of salt that is made by evaporating sea, lake, or spring water in evaporation ponds or pans. And during the evaporation process, there is young salt crystals that begin forming on top of the water. And they take these young salt crystals and then they rake and collect them. So it's a little more of an expensive sea salt. It's, you know, from the top, it's the earliest forming salt that's on top of the water. The next one is sel gris, or gray salt. And this is also known as Celtic sea salt, so you'll probably find this in a lot of different places. Celtic sea salt is a little more gray, and it's slightly wet, I guess. So it's gray in color, and it's known a little more to the French again, and it's made in the same process as fleur de sel, except this one is raked and harvested off of the bottom of the pond. So whenever you have all of the salt falling to the bottom, it's raked and that's what's collected. And it's probably a little more gray in color because it picks up different minerals or different particles than the ones that are found on top. And it's slightly moist, which means it's heavier than regular salt. But since some of that weight is water, the sodium content is less per weight. So say you have a teaspoon of regular table salt and a teaspoon of this Celtic sea salt, and they both weigh the same, the Celtic sea salt is actually going to be less in sodium because there's less salt in it. Part of that weight is water. So if I were to choose between, say, the fleur de sel or the sel gris, the Celtic sea salt, I think I would probably just choose the Celtic sea salt because it'll be cheaper. The fleur de sel is probably more for fine cooking, fine dining. And, you know, we're just going to be dissolving this into a fermentation, and it's not going to be really noticeable. So that's just a couple of the evaporated salts. And sometimes you'll buy a container of sea salt, and you're not really sure where it comes from, but it's sea salt, so I think that has to be better than just regular table salt. So don't sweat it. Just get some sea salt and make your fermentations. All right, now I have a few salts that are mined sea salts. And the first one that's very popular, you'll see it on Amazon, you'll see it in probably Williams-Sonoma or any of the more expensive stores, that's pink Himalayan salt. And this salt is harvested in Pakistan, which is part of the Himalayan mountain range. And the pink color is due to the salt containing iron oxide, which is rust, actually. So that's where it gets its pink color from. And it's a great salt to use since it is mined. And I would think it's probably very pure because it comes from the ancient salt beds, like I was saying before. You know, they haven't been contaminated with today's impurities. But this one's usually a little bit more expensive, and you usually don't get as much for your money. And you can try to compare yourself, you know, taste regular sea salt and taste pink Himalayan salt, and you should probably not even be able to tell a flavor difference. I think it's, you know, a little more hype, but in any case, if that's what you like and it's just a little bit more and that's what you want, you know, go ahead and use that. Use whichever salt you like. But that's just another one, pink Himalayan salt. All right, so the next one is kind of interesting. This one's actually called black salt, and it's also known as Kala Namak. And this salt is pinkish gray, and it's mined in India, and it has a strong sulfuric smell. So I probably wouldn't recommend this for any kind of fermentation unless, you know, you want to experiment with some interesting flavors, but it's mostly used in Southeast Asian cooking, but vegan chefs nowadays have also been trying to use it to give somewhat of like an eggy flavor to their cooking because of the sulfur smell. So that's just another interesting salt, black salt. And so the final major one I'll go over is Hawaiian sea salt. And Hawaiian sea salt can be either fine or coarse, and it could also be red or black. And the red Hawaiian sea salt gets its color from a natural mineral called aleia, which is a volcanic baked red clay. And the black version, the black Hawaiian sea salt, gets its black color from charcoal in it. So that's red and black Hawaiian sea salt. And I would say, you know, this is another interesting one that good to know, maybe good for cooking, but doesn't necessarily need to be used in fermentation. And there's so many more other salts out there, like smoked salt, seasoned salt, flake salt, and it goes on down the list. But what I would recommend is just sticking to sea salt myself, just for the added nutritional boost of the extra minerals and probably a slight difference in a better flavor, you know, over the more table salt, you know, double nutrient kind of salts. And whether I like evaporation harvested or mined, I would say either one. In terms of fermentation, though, I just stick to regular sea salt and not worry about the colored salts, only because they're going to be more expensive and you're just dissolving it anyways. The rarer colored salts are more used in fine cooking. All right, the next thing I want to go over is salt weights and brine basics. Because if you're going to be looking up recipes for making fermentations, you first want to know how you're going to be calculating this salt out in your recipes. You know, you're going to be measuring it, you're going to be weighing it, and the weight depends on three things. How coarse or fine the salt was ground, you know, how big the particles are, the density of the salt, and what the moisture content is. So you just heard me go through 10 or more different types of salt. So you can imagine with these different characteristics of salt, the weights are all going to be different on each one. And that's important when you're doing these recipes. And I have different methods for calculating out salt ratios. So I'll explain what I do here. And there are three basic ways to do this. So the first way is what I'll just call the exact scientific method of weights. And what you do with this is you pick a type of salt that you want to stick with. So say just regular sea salt or, you know, kosher salt, whatever you're using. And you're going to form recipes around that type of salt. And for this, you would weigh the salt with a scale. And that would be a gram scale, and not measuring it with teaspoons or tablespoons. Because like I said before, all salts are different and they have different sodium amounts and they don't all weigh the same at the same volume. So sticking to one type of salt will give you more exact results when you're forming recipes or following recipes. And then when you go to a different type of salt, you can kind of figure out, you know, what you like in terms of flavor. So when you're actually, you know, weighing the salt and measuring it in grams, you'll get an exact weight, you know, almost like an exact formula. So you can scale this up or down. And when you make another recipe, you can probably get more predictable results. And when you give it to somebody else, maybe they'll get a little more predictable results than if you would just say teaspoons or tablespoons of this or that. So to calculate the salinity that you want, you measure the water you're going to use in grams. and multiply by the decimal equivalent of the percent salinity that you want. And the same goes for if you're sweating the liquid out of vegetables like cabbage, and instead of using, a brine that you would pour over something, you measure either the water you're using in grams or the weight of the vegetables you're sweating liquid out of in grams. And don't worry about this. I'm about to go over a couple examples, so it'll give you a better idea of how to do this. All right, so say you just found a recipe for making pickles or something in terms of a percentage that they're telling you. Say you want a 2% salinity, and you're using 1 cup of water to cover the vegetables. So water weighs about 236 grams per cup. So what you would do is you multiply 236 by 0.02, which is the 2% salinity, and you get 4.72 grams of salt that you need. And when I look up table salt, you know, it's just a reference, this is just under 1 teaspoon of regular table salt per cup of water. But don't forget, you know, all salts weigh differently, so figure out what you like and stick to that, and you'll have your recipes kind of perfected by the time you get done with them. All right, let's do another one so, you know, you just get the gist of this. So say this time you find a recipe that tells you you need a 3.5% salinity, but now you have 1 quart of water this time that you're going to use to cover your vegetables. So first, you figure out what 1 quart of water weighs in grams, either by weighing it or just by converting it from quarts to cups. So if you just want to convert it rather than weighing it, you go 1 quart is equal to 4 cups. And then you just take 4 cups times the 236 grams is 944 grams for 4 cups of water or 1 quart. So then to get your 3.5% salinity, take the weight of 1 quart of water, which you just got is 944, times the 0.035, which is the 3.5% salinity, and you get 33 grams of salt you need per quart of water. And just for reference on this one, 33 grams of table salt is just under 1 tablespoon. So now that you have the weight of salt in grams that you need, you just measure out that salt in grams, put it in your container, put the 1 quart water in, and just cover your vegetables, and you're good to go. So the second way that you can do this, or the second method, which I've been kind of using up to this point and, you know, kind of easier to think about, is the measure it by measuring spoon anyways, and just stick to that. And this measurement uses teaspoons of salt per cup of water, or tablespoons of salt per quart, or even tablespoons of salt per gallon. So you just pick a salt that you like and form recipes around this method. And for different recipes, I use different amounts of salt. So say, like for my pickles, I usually like 3/4 a tablespoon of salt per cup of water, but you guys will probably like, you know, more like 1/2 tablespoon or even less per cup of water. I might slice a little of a pickle and just put it on a sandwich, which is very salty. But if I was going to eat a whole pickle, you know, I'd back way down on that salt ratio, because, you know, if you have an extremely salty pickle, you're not going to want to eat the whole thing. You're just going to want to use it as like a little garnish like I do. So that's why, you know, my pickles are a little bit saltier than, you know, what you would expect. So in this method, for me, if I need 2 cups of water to fill up my mason jar of cucumbers, I just double the salt I need. So like I said, if I use 3/4 tablespoon of salt per cup of water, it's now 1.5 tablespoons for 2 cups. I just mix up the salt and water and then pour it over the cucumbers. And here's a trick if you're making pickles or, you know, things like this often. You don't want to mess with measuring this out every single time. Get a 1/2 gallon jug or even a 1 gallon jug. And pour your salt in, fill it up with water, shake it up, and dissolve. And next time you need a brine, just pop the jug open and pour it over your vegetables, and it'll just always be there. You won't have to measure this out every time. So for that recipe, since again I'm using 3/4 tablespoon of salt per cup of water, for 1/2 gallon of water, put 6 tablespoons of salt. For 1 gallon of water, put 12 tablespoons of salt. When 12 tablespoons is, you know, 3/4 cup, by the way, you know, of salt. So make sure to adjust this for the taste that you like. And I don't use this ratio for every recipe. You know, in other recipes like my pickled peppers, I back the salt ratio way down because it's just too salty for that. I might blend the peppers up and make a hot sauce and, you know, it would just be too salty. And eventually I'll probably even migrate over to just measuring everything with a scale so I can give you guys more accurate recipes. But for now, this has been working great for me, and this is just the method I've been using. All right, the final way to measure your salinity or your salt ratio or weights is to just salt the taste method. And this is just adding the amount of salt that tastes good to you. So put your vegetables or whatever you're fermenting in the jar, pour in your water, add a little salt, stir to dissolve, taste, add a little more, stir to dissolve, taste, and so on. So this is the method I use, kind of like how I make soup. I never use a recipe. I just add something, add a little more, add the spices, and eventually, you know, it gets to the taste I'm looking for. And, you know, you can always add more salt. It's hard to take it out. And now I would actually preface all this by saying that this method is more for like safer ferments, like, you know, vegetable ferments, and not for riskier ferments like meats. You know, if you're doing meats or cheeses or any of the riskier ones, I would definitely stick to a recipe that, you know, actually works and is not just to taste. So the final section here I'll go over is just kind of general rules of salinity ratios in fermentation. So typically, you'll find that most recipes for fermenting vegetables you'll probably like are anywhere from, say, a 2 to 5% salinity ratio. But this really depends on your taste and how the ferment is working out. And, you know, you might even like 1%, or you might like a salt ratio much higher because, you know, you're using it for something different. It really comes down to the taste you're looking for and how it's working out for you. The next thing is on softer vegetables like cucumbers, sometimes if you have a higher salinity, say 5% or above, that'll actually help keep the cucumbers a little crunchier. But instead of adding more salt or sodium, you know, you can always use different leaves or tannins, you know, to do this. And once you get into other ferments like meat or different cheeses or brining olives, making fish sauce, or making a batch of miso, the salt ratios can go much, much higher, like 10% or even 20% or even more than that. And don't forget, you have to keep in mind, the higher the salinity of the brine that you're making, usually the longer the fermentation is going to take. So you need to take that into account when you're letting your ferment go. So make observations and taste whatever you're fermenting every day to see what you like. Another tip is when you're making brines, don't forget to add herbs, spices, and things like garlic. You know, I find sometimes adding more flavor with herbs and other aromatics like onions or garlic, sometimes it means you can back off the salt a little bit, and that extra flavor kind of takes up a little space of what the salt would. And sometimes even adding an acid like lemon juice, it'll also help you back off the salt, since you'll be starting with a brine that's even just a little bit higher in acid, which discourages other bacteria. But I just start off with a salt brine, or even backslop previous batches of brine to make new ones. If you do this, though, it does change the fermentation a little bit, since you're now starting with bacteria that you usually end the process with, instead of going through all of the successions of bacteria that rise and fall. So keep that in mind and, you know, see what you like. And of course, as an always general rule when fermenting vegetables, you always want whatever you're fermenting to be below the brine level. So just to wrap up, I hope you enjoyed, you know, me explaining why to use salt in fermentation, you know, the many different kinds of salt that's out there that you can use, and, you know, going through the couple examples of calculating your salinity percentage by weight volume or just by taste. So everything I've covered on today's show will be in the show notes, and I invite you guys to come out to fermentationpodcast.com and leave some comments on today's show, you know, even if you have any questions or just want to say hello. And also don't forget to subscribe to get updates of new shows and blog posts by email. And I really appreciate you guys listening. This has been Paul Bates from the Fermentation Podcast, encouraging you to put fermentation into practice, ferment responsibly, and get out there and create some culture.